Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the Voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we report on a new device for quadriplegics, people who have lost control of their bodies from the neck down. Not every part of their body is paralyzed.
The tongue not only has sensory inputs to the brain, but it also has a very good motor capability.
But first, we report on an unusual way to study science in the state of Maryland. High school students across Maryland now have a chance to perform experiments with the help of real scientists using laboratory equipment on a bus.
We have anything from biology, forensic science. So we have a blood lab where they try and go ahead and test to see if any of our evidence samples have blood on it.
It's America on the move today on As It Is, as we help you learn to read, speak, write, and understand everyday American English. Listen carefully, and before you know it, you will have improved your American English by listening to As It Is on VOA. Most schools in America do not have the latest in laboratory equipment. It is just too costly. But the state of Maryland and a nonprofit group found a way to make such equipment available during some parts of the school year. As Steve Ember tells us, they put it on a bus.
This is a chemistry class, correct?
Yes. The 13-meter-long Maryland BioLab is a mobile classroom filled with equipment that lets students explore many kinds of science. It travels around the state, visiting schools. Today, the bus has stopped at Patapsco High School and Center for Arts in the city of Baltimore. Science teacher Leah Warble is very pleased that her students could perform an experiment using real chemicals.
Today, the chemistry students were able to do an acid-base titration, which just means they neutralize an acid with a base. And so normally they would do it through simulations on a computer, and now is able to allow them to do it in real life, actual time, and actually apply it to something that we use in real life, which is biodiesel.
Scientist Angel Mangas led the mobile laboratory on the day VOA visited.
There are two TVs, so there's one down this end and there is one down that end. If you get lost at any point in time on your paper...
Ms. Mangas says the equipment lets students explore many different kinds of scientific interests.
We have anything from biology, forensic science. So we have a blood lab where they try and go ahead and test to see if any of our evidence samples have blood on it. We also have DNA analysis lab where they try and test to see who did a specific crime. And we also have chemistry.
The mobile lab has been bringing bioscience education to schools around Maryland for more than 10 years.
It's really nice to get them in here with hands-on activities. They get really excited and they want to be engaged.
Ms. Mangas talks to the students about how she became a scientist.
At the end of each class, if we have enough time, we'd like to take 5 or 10 minutes, talk about ourselves, tell them how we got into science, maybe where we went to school, what we did, the different kinds of things that we could do.
She says many students finish their experiments and leave the bus excited about the possibility of becoming a scientist. The Maryland Bioscience Foundation supports the BioLab program. Brian Gaines is the chief executive officer of the foundation. He says the organization's goal is to help create the next generation of scientists.
One of the reasons that we do this program is to talk about careers in science, not just science, but science, technology, engineering, and math.
Mr. Gaines says students on the bus get real-life experience they do not get in a classroom.
The equipment that the students are using on the mobile lab, they don't have in schools. So our instructors are actually scientists. They work alongside the teachers, so they bring that science experience from the laboratory into the schools, and they teach students how to use actually the newest techniques that we have in science.
That made a difference to 15-year-old Seda Sinan, who is interested in biology.
It like gave me like more materials to work with than I had at school. It's more like interactive.
Her classmate, Shanara Jefferson, agrees.
Well, it's really showed me how just a little bit of a difference can really impact like your product when you're doing something in there. Like I only added just a little bit of the solution and it completely affected my entire thing.
Back in the school classroom, Leah Warble's students continue working on the results of their experiments on the bus.
It does help me do my job.
Ms. Warble says children usually do not know what they are interested in until they get real-life experience with a subject.
Well, the excitement of feeling like a real scientist, I mean, even just a change in the what they were wearing goggles and blue gloves versus white gloves, made them feel more television scientists, if you will. To handle that kind of situation makes them feel like more responsible for the work because they are now intrigued in doing it and they feel respected and responsible since we gave them those opportunities.
People paralyzed from the neck down must use a wheelchair to move around. One of the biggest problems for them is controlling the movements of the wheelchair. To help them, American scientists have invented a system that lets those who cannot move their arms and legs operate the wheelchair with their tongues. The device is so easy to use that it may open up other possibilities for these people, who are called quadriplegics. A very small magnet is placed on the person's tongue. Each movement changes the magnetic field around the person's head. Sensors in a headset read the changes and send them to a smartphone. A smartphone application, or app, then changes them into commands for the wheelchair's motors. As the patient slowly moves his or her tongue, the wheelchair begins moving, then changes direction. Mesam Govanlu is an associate professor of electrical engineering at the Georgia Institute of Technology. He invented the tongue drive system.
The tongue not only has sensory inputs to the brain, but it also has a very good motor capability. So why not using the tongue as an output of the brain?
He says his invention is more useful for quadriplegics than voice commands because their voices may be weak. Researchers are developing other systems that would let quadriplegics use electrical signals from the brain to control devices. Professor Govanlu says his patients were able to learn how to use the tongue drive in a few hours. His team now is developing it for controlling almost anything.
And the target device could be your wheelchair, could be your computer, could be your flat screen TV, air conditioning system, you name it, because the rest of the technology is already in place.
The Georgia Tech team also is seeking to put the magnetic sensors into a dental device, so a headset would not be needed. Professor Govanlu says his device could be available for purchase within a few years. And that's our program for today. It was written in special English from reports by Faiza El-Masri in Baltimore, Maryland, and George Putich in Washington. I'm Christopher Cruz, reporting from VOA Learning English Headquarters in Washington. I'll be back next week at this same time, and June Sims will be here tomorrow with another edition of As It Is. I hope you'll join us then, here on the Voice of America. The Technology Report is next, followed by This is America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. Dyslexia is a learning disorder. It interferes with the ability to recognize words and, for some readers, to understand what they have read. Experts say dyslexia affects about 5 to 10% of the population of the United States. Researchers have long known that people with dyslexia write or read words and letters backwards, in the wrong order. But a new study shows that people with dyslexia may have trouble redirecting their attention between senses, from seeing something to hearing something. This study suggests something that might help dyslexic people learn more quickly: playing video games. Vanessa Harar of Britain's University of Oxford led the study. She reported the findings in the journal Current Biology. The study suggests that dyslexic people may have trouble moving quickly from what they read to what they hear. Dr. Harar calls this a sluggish shifting of attention across the senses.
So if you're trying to read something and then trying to listen to somebody reading out loud and you're trying to kind of follow along what they're reading, you have to switch your attention from hearing what they're saying to looking at the piece of paper and back again. So we found that they have quite sluggish shifting of attention across the senses.
In the study, Dr. Harar tested 17 people with dyslexia and 19 others without any reading problems. The volunteers were asked to push a button as quickly as possible when they heard a sound, saw a light, or experienced both together. Dr. Harar compared the speed of their reactions. She found that people with dyslexia were just as fast as the others when they saw only a picture or heard only a sound. But the dyslexics had a slower reaction time when they heard a sound and saw a picture at the same time. Dr. Harar feels like playing action video games could help dyslexic people shift from seeing to hearing more quickly. She adds that images in video games force the eyes to move and focus quickly.
Video game things kind of pop out of here and there, and you have to kind of move your eyes around the screen quite quickly and respond to different things quite quickly. And the more you play a video game, the faster you get, kind of thing. So the video game is really training the attention system to move quickly.
The study also showed that dyslexic people had the most difficulty going between what they saw and what they heard. This may have an effect on how dyslexic children are taught how to read. When children learn the alphabet, they usually see the letter first and then hear the sound, or they see and hear the letter at the same time. The study showed that dyslexics might learn more quickly if they heard the sound of a letter or word first before seeing it. And that is the Technology Report from VOA Learning English. I'm June.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to This is America. I'm Steve Ember. This week on our program, we explore a UNESCO World Heritage Site in the American Southwest near the city of Carlsbad, New Mexico. Carlsbad Caverns National Park contains more than 100 caves below the surface of the desert. Most are closed to the public, but anyone can visit the main attraction, one of the largest caves in the world. Huge, incredible, inspiring. Words like these come to mind as visitors enter a world of silence, darkness, and cold, almost 230 meters under the ground. Come along with us as Bob Doty and Barbara Klein tell you about Carlsbad Caverns.
An elevator lowers you into the world of Carlsbad Caverns, the big cave at Carlsbad Caverns National Park. Silent except for the voices of guides and visitors. And not completely dark, the National Park Service has enough lighting to see many of the beautiful formations all around. The temperature is about 13 degrees Celsius. A cavern is a large cave, but Carlsbad Cavern is really a long series of chambers. One of these is called the Big Room. The Big Room is more than 3 hectares big. The ceiling is 77 meters high. The Big Room is the single largest underground chamber ever found in North America.
The Big Room and other parts of the cavern contain huge, sharp formations of minerals. People are free to explore the lit formations in the Big Room, but park rangers must guide visitors to other areas of the cave. Stalactites hang from the ceiling. Stalagmites rise from the floor. Some even meet to create a column. Other formations look like needles, popcorn, pearls, and flowers. A visitor still remembers the memory aid she learned long ago from her fifth-grade teacher. Stalactites have to hang on tight to the ceiling or they might fall off. And be careful about stalagmites. You might trip over one on the floor.
One of the first questions that visitors have is, how did Carlsbad Cavern form? Guides explained that it did not result from the action of water and streams like other limestone caves. Instead, it was created by the action of sulfuric acid. The limestone developed about 250 million years ago. Then, within the last 20 million years, movements in the earth pushed the rock upward, forming the Guadalupe Mountains. Today, these mountains extend from West Texas into southeast New Mexico. The action of oil and natural gas created hydrogen sulfide in the limestone. The hydrogen sulfide reacted with oxygen in rainwater moving through the rock. Sulfuric acid developed. The acid created the caves by dissolving the limestone in its path. Later, the water and most of the acid left the caves as the Guadalupe Mountains continued to rise. This permitted fresh water to move through. The fresh water left behind minerals. These minerals became the formations and shapes on the ceilings, walls, and floors of the caves.
People are not the only ones who visit Carlsbad Caverns National Park. About 400,000 Mexican free-tailed bats come to the Big Cave from Mexico each summer to give birth. Every evening, as the sun goes down, thousands of adult bats fly out of the natural entrance of the cave. It can take from 20 minutes to more than 2 hours for them all to leave. The bats fly to nearby river valleys to feed on night-flying insects. Then, toward morning, they return to the bat cave within Carlsbad Cavern. Park Service rangers explain that mother bats find their babies by remembering their location, their smell, and the sound of their cry. Mothers and pups hang in groups on the ceiling. They spend the day resting and feeding. While the adults go out at night for food, the young bats hang out in the cave for 4 or 5 weeks. Then, in July or August, they join their mothers on these nightly flights. Finally, in late October or early November, the bats all leave and return to Mexico. But they always return the next year.
It is easy to imagine that it was the bats that led ancient people to discover the cave. Archaeologists and others have found evidence of Ice Age hunters near the cave entrance. They have also found pieces of spear points left about 10,000 years ago. More recently, Apache Indians painted pictures at the entrance, and evidence of one of their cooking areas was found beside a nearby path. Around 1900, a teenage cowboy named James Larkin White began to explore the cave. Jim White told his story in the 1932 book, The Discovery and History of Carlsbad Caverns. Here is a reading of his description of his first sight of the bats and the big cave.
I thought it was a volcano, but then I'd never seen a volcano, nor never before had I seen bats swarm, for that matter. During my life on the range, I'd seen plenty of prairie whirlwinds, but this thing didn't move. It remained in one spot, spinning its way upward. I watched it for perhaps a half hour, until my curiosity got the better of me. Then I began investigating. I worked my way through the rocks and brush until I found myself gazing into the biggest and blackest hole I had ever seen, out of which the bats seemed literally to boil. The more I thought of it, the more I realized that any hole in the ground that could house such a gigantic army of bats must be a whale of a big cave. I crept between cactus until I lay on the brink of the chasm and looked down. During all the years I'd known of the place, I'd never taken the trouble to do this. There was no bottom in sight. I shall never forget the feeling of awe-ness it gave me.
Jim White told how he built a ladder from rope, wire and sticks, and returned to the entrance of the cave a few days later.
I found myself climbing down, down, deeper and deeper into the blackness. At last, my feet touched something solid. I lighted my lantern and found that I was perched on a narrow ledge almost at the end of my rope, literally and figuratively. By now, I could see into the tunnel. It wasn't much farther down to the floor of it, and that floor looked smooth and level. I decided that with a little exhibition of human fly stuff, I could hold on to the rough wall and go down another 20 feet to level territory. Standing at the entrance of the tunnel, I could see ahead of me a darkness so absolutely black it seemed a solid. The light of my lantern was but a sickly glow. Nevertheless, I forged ahead, and with each step the tunnel grew larger, and I felt as though I was wandering into the very core of the Guadalupe Mountains.
A few years later, a settler named Abijah Long also found the entrance and went into the cavern. He found huge amounts of bat droppings. Abijah Long hired local workers to mine the guano, which he sold to farmers as fertilizer. At the same time, he explored much of the caves. Some people might even say Abijah Long was the first real explorer of Carlsbad Cavern. But Jim White made it his life's work to make sure the public would see and enjoy the cavern. He worked on Abijah Long's mining operation for 20 years. The authors of the book, Carlsbad Cavern, The Early Years, say Jim White took the job for the chance to keep exploring the cave. And after the mining operation closed, he started building paths in the cavern. Yet once he had enough paths built to welcome visitors, no one seemed interested in his bat cave.
Then in 1918, Jim White took a professional photographer into the cave. Ray Davis's pictures of the big room appeared in the New York Times. National interest began to grow. In 1923, scientists from the National Geographic Society explored the caves. The following year, President Calvin Coolidge named Carlsbad a national monument. Presidents can declare national monuments, but Congress must act to establish a national park. And that is what Congress did in 1930.
Since then, parts of Carlsbad Caverns have been used for movie sets, weddings, even meetings of the Carlsbad City Council. Most visitors go to the main cavern, but some experienced cavers are permitted to explore 5 wild caves in the park. And in another one, scientists are studying microbes in search of a cure for cancer.
As for Jim White, he became chief ranger of Carlsbad Caverns. In his story, in the book The Discovery and History of Carlsbad Caverns, he talks about all the work that was done.
I doubt if you can understand how happy this modernizing has made me. It's like the pleasant end to a dream.
Our program was written by Nancy Steinbach and produced by Dana Demange. I'm Bob Doty.
And I'm Barbara Klein. Doug Johnson was our reader.
This is America is a production of VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us again next week.